want to tell the audience that they're really cheating themselves if they're not watching on the YouTube or the Twitter feed at the beginning of the show, because, and Fred just said it looks like sort of a nursing home, but Sue and I grab our blankets that the listener so generously gifted us that we still don't know who it was. They remained anonymous, but we appreciate that. And all told, how many blankets were sent, Sue? Are there 4 sent overall?
Yep.
Wait, yeah, your mic is, what's going on with that deal? That's always a good start, right? Usually Ethan's 4. Able to fix that.
We
there
got
you
4.
Go.
4, and that was very generous. 2 pink and 2 blue, and we so appreciate it.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
You want to try that again with that other
day.
Mic? Let's test this. It's always good to work out the particulars of the show when we're doing the show. Say it again. No, that's not working there, Ethan, so something's going on.
Oh, wait, there it did.
There, whoa.
Something happened, people.
It worked. We can turn that one off. All right, so let's just start the whole damn thing over again. How is everyone on this Monday?
Great, thanks for asking.
It's not Monday, is it? It's Wednesday.
No, it's Wednesday.
Oh, my God.
Great,
this is what happens. How was moving day yesterday?
It was warm, but it turned out fine.
Yeah, today would have been a better day because it's really not uncomfortable out there right now.
Well, people are moving. I did not realize the movers only had one day open this month, and it was that Monday. It was a Monday, and then we kind of partially moved yesterday as well.
Really?
Yeah.
So they didn't have any other time to do
it. Yeah, one day open. I mean, apparently it gets better in the fall, but boy, they're really slammed in the summer.
Well, because a lot of families want to get into the new houses
school
by
district.
School time and everything
sure.
like that. So, like, are you completely out or you still have stuff to do at the old house?
Oh, I still have stuff to do. And I got to stage it to sell it.
Yeah. So are you doing that on your own, basically?
Well, I actually have got a friend of mine who is there are different kinds of staging. You can virtually stage. I could just take pictures of your empty house, and then they virtually stage it with fake furniture, and you can't really tell anymore.
Right.
There's the kind where they come over and say, we're going to use your stuff, but we're going to tweak it, and I'll bring in pillows and fluffy things, and we'll kind of floof
it. That makes sense, right, yeah.
Or you can empty the place out and bring in furniture, and I've opted for number 2 because I haven't tried that before, and I trust her, and I could tell everybody else what to do, but when it's my own house, I think, duh. So I'm having her come in.
Well, option number 2 seems to be the good compromise. It won't cost as much, right? I don't know.
Correct.
What's the ballpark for if you're staging a home? You're looking at $1,500, $2,000, $2,500, more than that?
Probably. And then it depends on how long and how many rooms, right? And how big your house is. So normally, we'll see how this goes. And I'm kind of excited about it. But yeah, I got to go back there.
You know, I told you I had this house in the city not too far from where you live for many years, and I remember when I put this damn thing on the market several times before we sold it, but I remember, I think it was the first time I had it on the market, I would go to the open houses in the neighborhoods, you know, near me to see what the competition was like, and damn it if they didn't all look better because they were staged.
Yeah,
and
listen.
It looked really good, and I'm like, well, I don't think I can compete with this, and you know, some of it was like IKEA stuff that was brand new, and this is back when, you know, the house flippers were really doing their thing. I would say this would be early, like 2010, 2011, that era.
I'll tell you what, staging is no joke. It's the best way to do it. So that's why I'm going to try this just to see if the middle option works.
What does that tell you about the stuff that you have in your house? It looks nobody likes it, right?
Well, I got to keep some of it, but she'd walk through and say, this goes, this stays, this goes, this stays, and I'll bring... She said on any bookshelf, it's got to be 50% of the books that are there now. Your cookbooks have to be reduced by 50%. Correct.
Really?
You got to get it down and make it look clean and open so that they think, yes, I can move in here.
Oh,
you see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine. Now, I'm not no plans to move. I've moved too much. I chronicled that the other day. But thinking about moving would make me so nervous and freaked out because of all the animals, and there's little areas that the bunny has gone after on the carpet. So I don't even know how I would show a house with all those damn animals in there.
Well, at night.
I have to get them all out. And by the way, yesterday you weren't here, so I had to go weigh the puppy. I had to weigh Max so he could get his... His Bravecto, which is like the flea and tick stuff, 36.8 pounds.
Wow, is he grown?
The last time, which was 5 weeks ago, he was 25. So he's gained about 10 pounds just in the last month. And now, you know, his paws are still big. Fred's like, yeah, me too. Paws are still big, but they don't look like he's got like a ton of growing into him now. He does probably. I think I'm trying to make myself feel better. But, you know, when you Google that, I don't know if this is accurate. So how big will a dog who's 5 months old? He was 5 months old yesterday. on today's the 20th, right? So that was the 19th. He was born March 19th. How much will a dog that weighs 36 pounds weigh when it's full grown? They say, what would your guess be?
Gosh, I don't know. 80?
60 to 80.
Okay.
So I'm hoping for the 60 side of that, but I'm kind of locked in at this point for sure. All right, well, we got a lot of stuff going on here today. I do want to mention, too, on a fun factor note, we'll have George Gray in tomorrow to do The Price is Wrong. George is awesome with us. He, of course, is the voice of The Real Price is Right on CBS television, the highest rated daytime television show that there is. He works with Drew Carey every day, and he is a St. Louis guy and a Cardinals fan, typically. We'll find out about that tomorrow. But he did text me a couple of days ago, and he's coming back in town. Mama May, his mom lives here, so George is swinging in, I think, even later today, and he's going to be with us tomorrow. He's very generous with his time. He always makes time for us. And we had him set up on a day that I had to miss about 4 to 5 weeks ago. So I'm looking forward to seeing him because I haven't caught up with him. We have Josh Krasauer, who is a 97.1 political insider, the editor-in-chief of the Jewish Insider, and a political analyst for Fox Radio and Fox TV. He's going to join us here in a couple of minutes with a bunch of different topics, including the there's some Union Station protests today. It's the same people at Union Station that I see. Remember last week I was talking about the
Smithsonian had a bunch, too.
Yeah, but no, I was talking about like when you're downtown Lockwood and Elm in Webster Groves, and there's a couple of those churches right there. It's the same old white guilty hippies that hold the BLM signs. That's exactly what you have in D.C. And there were some great responses from Pete Hegseth and Stephen Miller and the vice president who were there today, and I'll have that audio for you. Brad Young's going to join us this hour, our chief legal analyst. We'll have Alex Rich in the 4 o'clock hour and got some fun stuff for that. And then Eric Schmidt, who has written a new book. I have to be mentioned somewhere, like in the dedication, in the foreword, in the acknowledgments. Fred, do you think? Maybe a whole chapter?
I think a footnote.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, there should be something in there from the former official state senator of the Mark Reardon Show. And then you missed this yesterday. I'm sure you didn't miss the story, Sue. You weren't here. But, you know, Andrew Bailey, and we love Andrew Bailey, comes to see us in person quite a bit. He's heading to Washington to be the co-deputy director of the FBI, which I think eventually he's going to be I think he's just going to be the deputy director of the FBI. And Catherine Hanaway was named as the new AG by Governor Mike Kehoe. We thought maybe we would get her on the air yesterday. It didn't work out schedule-wise. But, Fred, you tell me that she will be here in person tomorrow.
Yeah, in the 5 o'clock hour, she'll be here in studio.
I have not seen Catherine in a long time. I mean, Sue, she was a regular on the roundtable for many years.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Did I say the Jeff Smith story yesterday or not?
No.
Because, still, this is one of the craziest things to me. And I remember it better than most people. But when Jeff Smith was indicted many years ago, I think this would have been 2011 or something like that, 2010, 2011, for lying to the FBI about this mailer that got sent out. You know, he went to federal prison. He wrote a book about it, Mr. Smith Goes to Prison. It's a good book. And then Jeff kind of made his way, as many past felons do, made their way back to the Mark Reardon Show. The joke was always, you know, if you're on the panel, you tend to go to federal prison. We've had several that have done that. Lewis Reed.
It's a high risk.
Jeffrey Boyd. There is a high risk. But, you know, Jeff came out of that strong, and I love him as a friend and as a person. And, you know, he's great on the show now. But literally the Friday before he was indicted, and this stuff was bubbling, but I don't think most people knew about it. And Catherine was a former U.S. attorney, right? So she would have been involved in the case. Well, at this point, she knew. She's sitting with Jeff Smith in the room. This was at KMOX, Fred. And that Friday, it was one of those Sixth Sense type moments where the next week, the story comes out that he's indicted. And I rewind in my brain back to Friday thinking, oh, my God, both of them knew that this was coming out. There's no way that you can convince me otherwise. And they sat there and they did that roundtable that afternoon. So that was an interesting moment. But yeah, she was regular on the roundtable for a long time. I've got some negative. You know, I think it's a great choice. She's got a ton of experience. She was a U.S. attorney. She's been in private practice now for a while. She was the first female speaker of the Missouri House, ran for statewide office as well. So there's no doubt about her level of expertise and competence. And some people on Twitter have shot back, you know, terrible choice. I don't know where that comes from outside of the fact that she's kind of deemed more establishment. Mike Kehoe is a little bit more establishment as well. Nick Schroer's name was in the mix for that position. At least Nick said that. I saw that on his Twitter. But he's someone, you know, it's so funny because here we are. We're already talking about everything that's going to happen next year and in 28. Everything that is in the news cycle, like even redistricting in Texas and here, it's not really about the moment. It's about what's going to happen next year. And there really is, I got to be careful with my time here, so I might hold off on this, but there's some really interesting, it's not polling, it's more just numbers and information from the states. There's a guy by the name of Shane Goldmacher who writes at the New York Times, and they did a story today in a deep dive into the numbers of voter registration situations in red states, blue states, and battleground states alike. And the amount of ground that the Democrats are losing to the Republicans everywhere is quite stunning. It really is. And I'll share those numbers with you here a little bit later in the afternoon. I was going to do that now, but I got off on the tangent. I do have a great story for when Alex Rich is here, because this is relatable as a parent. And I heard some discussion about this on Fox today. My daughter's 10, for example. She has soccer practice tonight. She had volleyball practice last night. And, you know, we try to get her involved in as much. Remember, she used to do swimming as well. But you get to this point, and Tom Brady was kind of talking about this last week, where, and I think some of this has to do with a lack of parental coaches and, you know, just supply and demand as everything does. But if you don't get your kid into that like soccer right away, and then all of a sudden they decide to play soccer and they're just a little older, then they're at the point where all these other kids have kind of passed them up. And the advice, who was it talking about this? It wasn't Tom Brady. Greg Olson, yeah. Former NFL player who's on the broadcast team for Fox, saying, look, don't narrow this down to just one sport. But I think a lot of parents do that, and they feel pressured to do it, because if they don't, if they kind of spread it around a little bit, you get to a point where the kids feel like they can't catch up to the skill level. And it's kind of sad when you think about it. And there's a lot of competition about that. But we'll get to all of that here this afternoon, plus an audio cut of the day and more. Well, Josh Krasauer is back with us this afternoon. He's one of my favorite pundits. He's been with me for a long time on this show, 97.1 FM Talk Political Insider. He's the editor-in-chief of the Jewish Insider, and you see him on Fox News all the time and on Fox Radio. You hear him. Josh, how are you? I hope you're having a good summer.
It's great. Great to be back with you, Mark. It's summer here in D.C., but there's never a dull moment when it comes to news out of the White House.
And Missouri supplied some of that news this week, sending our attorney general, or I guess our former attorney general, Andrew Bailey, to the FBI. We've got, man, if you're attorney general in Missouri, you'll last about 2 years and then you go on to better things. That seems to be the pattern right now.
Yeah, no, that's a big story in Missouri for the rapid ascent of Andrew Bailey. There's also, the layering of Dan Bongino in the deputy AG role. That seems like his role may be diminishing somewhat.
Yes,
in Washington.
Yes, it
especially
does.
Amid the Jeffrey Epstein news.
Yeah, so what are your thoughts on that? Because it seemed like that was an unusual, well, I was surprised by it. I didn't think that was going to happen, that Andrew Bailey was going to go to Washington. So what's your take on what happened here? Is it because, you're saying it's because of some of the Epstein stuff related to Bongino?
Well, yeah, look, I don't have any new reporting, but it's well established that, look, Dan Bongino was an unconventional pick for that deputy FBI director's position. He's a podcaster. He's a provocateur. And when you're in government, you have to play team ball. And it was with the questions over release of Epstein, information from the government, being on the same team and being in the same, holding the line with Pam Bondi and with the White House became challenging, at least some parts of his listening audience in the past. And the base of the MAGA movement was very frustrated with Bongino, and we're giving him some hell online, and it became very frustrating. So, look, I'm not sure if he's going to be lasting long in that position. I think the hiring of Bailey is a sign that Bongino may not be in that role too much longer. But it is, at the very least, a very unconventional setup where you have essentially two deputy AGs reporting to Kash Patel at the FBI.
Do you think, a couple of weeks ago I heard, is Pam Bondi's job on the line just a little bit for some of those same reasons? Is she on the hot seat or not?
No, I never thought. I said so as much at the time. Look, Donald Trump, President Trump, trusts Pam Bondi. There's a loyalty there, and look, I think we are now past that political storm where, a couple weeks after all the heat the White House was facing, Donald Trump still has record high support within the Republican Party. I think Pam Bondi, if you look at the polls, her own image is taking a hit, especially among maybe some independents and maybe some of the MAGA base. But ultimately, Trump is the decider, he does trust Pam Bondi. She's been one of his loyal soldiers when it comes to enforcing some of the executive orders he's made with policing in D.C., National Guard showing up in the nation's capital. She's been a face of that decision. And I think there's no sign at all that she is in trouble at the Justice Department.
So what do you think right now of the D.C., I don't know if you want to call it a takeover, whatever it's referred to as? You know, you're essentially a D.C. resident. I always used to see out there. It's been a few years since I've been to D.C., and I used to stay right there by Union Station. Obviously, there is, you know, the contention that this is, again, that something that Trump is doing because of politics and Epstein. I think that's a bunch of crap. You probably saw earlier today Pete Hegseth and the vice president, you know, making some comments about this situation. Then you have questions about the crime rates maybe being manipulated. It seems like a lot of people, even Joe Scarborough, you know, Josh, who finally have to be honest about the situation, admit, yeah, this is a little bit of a problem, and folks probably want something done about it in the nation's capital.
Yeah, look, crime has been a problem in the nation's capital. It was worse a few years ago. The trend has been in the right direction, by the way, because of Republicans in Congress. When Biden was president, the D.C. City Council wanted to actually loosen penalties for some serious crimes at a time when D.C. was facing, at the time, record levels of crime. And it became so politically toxic that even Joe Biden and President Biden supported overruling the D.C. Council. And what ended up happening in D.C. is that the moderates on the city council, the mayor, who tends to be more moderate on these issues, actually won the fight, and more punitive penalties, more stronger penalties were actually enforced when it came to felonies and carjackings and other serious crimes. One bit, you know, the problem, I think, I think the public looks at Washington and they don't, many of them don't see this as excessive. They think that D.C. needs more law enforcement, and they don't view the National Guard hanging out being a problem. Look, the challenge is, I think a lot of the National Guard is stationed at the National Mall, the Lincoln Memorial. These are not the high crime areas in D.C., like the Columbia Heights, Anacostia. You know, there are other parts of the city that probably could use more law enforcement, and I'm not sure if they're getting that level of support. And secondarily, look, the biggest issue, and then Jeanine Pirro, the new U.S. attorney in D.C., has really been ahead of the curve on this. But one of the biggest problems when it comes to D.C. crime is that juveniles, anyone under the age of 25, judges can basically let them loose. They have a great deal of discretion in terms of how much time they serve, even if it's for a murder or a violent crime. And that's an issue that you see these repeat offenders that are juveniles out on the streets reoffending. You see, there was a guy someone was shot at a metro at a bus station. The suspect was 19 years old. They got a very light sentence. There are many instances like this, and partly is because of the D.C. law that basically gives judges incredible amounts of discretion in loosening the penalties for some of these serious crimes.
You know, we have this weird situation here, and I just learned about, we have a point system for these juvenile offenders. This kind of came up a couple of weeks ago. We had these group of 14-year-old kids who carjacked an Uber driver, and they were arrested. There was a weapon involved, and they're pulled into custody. They're released to their parents. 2 days later, they do the same thing to a Lyft driver. So, you know, the criminals are educated. The older people know that the young kids aren't going to get in trouble. You get these points based on felonies. How, in fact, you can't reach the maximum 15 points when you carjack someone and use a gun, I think, is now up for debate here in Missouri and in St. Louis. But it's, you know, some of these things, the pattern is the same from my city all the way to your city. Josh Krossauer is with us this afternoon. All right, is Trump going to score another victory here when it comes to Putin and Zelensky, or are we being a little bit too optimistic right now?
I am more pessimistic. I think there's a lot. Trump likes the drama, the glamour that we saw this week in Washington, with really every major European world leader coming to Washington, having conversations, including Zelensky, the Ukrainian leader, having conversations about a possible negotiation. But we're not hearing much from Russia, and we're not hearing much pressure. I mean, the problem is that by giving Putin essentially the red carpet out in Alaska and giving him sort of and backing down from the potential sanctions and from the discussion of a ceasefire, which was the whole point of a lot of these negotiations in the first place, we really haven't kept the pressure up on Putin. So it doesn't look like Putin's in any mood to meet with to have any of these trilateral negotiations. He's stalling, as he has throughout this whole process. He's continuing to attack Ukraine. A lot of civilians being killed on a daily basis. So look, Lindsey Graham and Richard Blumenthal in the Senate have a a tough sanctions bill that they've been promoting and really eager to get going. And I think if Russia isn't serious about cutting the deal, I think at a certain point, Trump has to lay the punishment on. And we haven't seen a whole lot of that, despite some encouraging moves and some high-profile diplomacy. Ultimately, there hasn't been a lot of movement towards actually getting Russia to stop killing Ukrainians and to stop attacking Ukraine and to actually come up with some agreement.
Let's move to Texas and the redistricting. We're going to try to do some of this here. I'm a little uncomfortable with it just because I understand the point. I know that Trump's putting pressure on our governor, Mike Kehoe, and the legislature is going to be likely called into a special session or what they call an extraordinary session. They're going to try to redraw the maps here. I'm uncomfortable from this standpoint that I don't think voters really like it when you start doing these things every couple years. Then again, I don't know how dialed in people will really be, but obviously there's a little competition going right now, whether it's Texas or California or Missouri, to make sure the numbers are there for Republicans next fall, Josh.
There's a lot of partisan machinations from California to Texas and into Missouri and Indiana. And look, first of all, I think getting a few extra seats probably isn't going to make the difference between Republicans. If it did not, usually the party in power loses seats, and sometimes they can lose a lot of seats
typically
in a bad year.
Right.
Republicans hold a very narrow majority. So let's say they get four or five seats out of Texas, and let's say California doesn't do anything. I still don't know that if that's going to make the difference between, if it's not a good night for Republicans, you're not going to be able to gerrymander your way into the House majority or holding the House majority. So I also think there's some risks involved. If you really look at the Texas map, look, I think they'll get at least several seats out of that redraw. But a lot of the map is premised on the fact that Hispanic voters, which swung very much to Trump and to the Republicans in 2024, a lot of that is premised on the fact that they're going to stay with the Republicans. There are a couple majority Hispanic districts that actually went for Biden or were actually a little more Democratic not that long ago. And I think when it comes to immigration policy, look, these folks are very anti-illegal immigration, tough on border security. But when you see images of laborers, of people who are here illegally but are not committing any crimes, that are being, pulled over, deported, that's not playing well with the Hispanic community across the country. Poland is starting to show that. And I think there could be a little bit of, sometimes you get your eyes are bigger than your stomach and you're like, I can win this seat and this seat and this seat. Well, two of those Hispanic majority seats might actually not be as winnable for Republicans as they think. And they may end up, costing their party in the long term if they get a little too greedy.
Yeah, and I get that. So, and all these races are local. So, and you have to have, you and I have talked about this, the quality of the candidate really does matter in these local congressional races. But then you have the other side of the equation right now. And maybe this is more bigger picture toward, and I can't even believe I'm talking about, 28 at this point. But, Mamdani is the gift that keeps on giving for Republicans, sort of like Cori Bush was here in St. Louis. So a lot can happen between now, certainly, and next year, and certainly now in a few years. But it seems like you have the Democrats, outside of maybe a guy like Rahm Emanuel, who's trying to talk common sense, still way out there on the fringes of most of these issues. So that's got to help Republicans.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I mean, look, big picture for the midterms, I think Republicans are still very, very heavily favored to hold the Senate, probably with a pretty decent majority like they have now. And the House, look, I think we saw 2018, where Democrats gained about 40 seats, you're not going to see that in for a whole host of reasons. But a big part of that is that the Democratic Party has gone so far to the left, and also if you look at some of the data from the New York Times reporting today, the registration numbers for the Democratic Party
are
historic
way down, right?
Lows.
Yeah,
mean, people are leaving. The moderates are leaving the Democratic Party. They're becoming independents. Some of them are even becoming Republicans. And that means that the party is becoming more left-wing, more radical, and less appealing to the broader public. So the Democrats have a whole host of problems. If Mamdani gets elected in New York City, these New York swing seats are going to be hard for Democrats to win over because of the unique local issue that presents the Democratic Party. So, look, I would say Democrats probably are favored to win the House, but will they get the kind of wave? Will they get the kind of big result that they experienced in other recent elections? Unlikely. I think it's more, we're talking more like 10, 15 seats than the bigger numbers that we've seen in recent elections.
Well, let's at least close here as we often do with baseball. 6-7 weeks ago, we had some hopes that the Cardinals were going to be able to compete in this division and in the wild card. I know that technically we're still alive. I think the fan base has kind of moved on to whatever might happen next season and beyond. But I got to tell you something, Josh, I don't know if you follow this at all, but our crowds here in St. Louis look like, Cincinnati or maybe D.C. and, you know, maybe not as bad as Pittsburgh, but they're not looking good. You know, we usually draw 3 million. We're not going to get even close to that right now. And the fans are frustrated because we're not quite as far back as the Nationals are in your division. But, you know, the expectations here in St. Louis to compete year after year after year, that's kind of gone by the wayside. And the fans are speaking with their wallets right now, not filling the seats at Busch Stadium.
Yeah, I mean, we're experiencing the same thing. And I mean, it's been a tough run for both of our franchises. Look, for DC, it's ownership, and a lot of it starts at the top. And I think, I mean, the Cardinals do have, you know, the farm system, I think, has not been quite as bountiful for the Cardinals. We used to have like a real supply of good young talent, and that's kind of dried up.
And we traded them all away. All the young talent we had, we traded, like Randy Rosarena and others.
it's kind of remarkable. And the Cardinals are so good for so long, it's hard to imagine the Cardinals not making the playoffs. But look, I think it starts at the top. You got to have a general manager that can sign good players and bring talent into the organization. And it's been a little bit of a dry spell.
Yeah.
Just like in the National, we know this in Washington. It's been that way since 2020.
We got a little transition there because John Mozeliak is in his last year, and this Chaim Bloom guy is coming in to run the show. Josh Krossauer, always great to have you on. I hope your summer's going well. We'll talk again soon. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mark.
We've had this mystery of the listener who sent us the blankets, of which I'm wearing my blue blanket right now because it's 66 degrees in the studio. He sent a couple of blue, a couple of pink. We didn't know who he was. Timothy Scott. Thank you, Timothy, for sending them.
Thank you so much.
He is a regular viewer on the stream, and Ethan noticed that he had chimed in on that. Now, mind you, I said if you had a little room on the Amazon account, I need some Windex refill and some Myers hand soap and stuff like that. That has not arrived, but if it's within your, you know, your reach, Timothy, I would appreciate that because
You're just being grateful.
I am. No, but he did great. Really, we use them more than maybe people would expect, right?
Yes.
I have mine draped over my shoulders right now. Brad Young is here with us. He's not in the studio, but through the magic of radio, he sounds like he is. He's a chief legal analyst here at 97.1 FM Talk and a partner with Harris Dahl Fisher & Young. Did a lot of fill-in for me over the past few weeks. Were you freezing your butt off in here? Could you use that blanket right now, Brad?
No, I didn't need it because I have my own insulation. It's called being fat.
Well, fair enough. I'm glad you didn't need it. Look, we have limited time here to talk about several different things, so let me get rolling on the Texas thing and redistricting. And obviously, I just covered this a little bit with Josh Krossauer and doing this outside of a 10-year cycle. Look, I spoke extensively with Nick Shore here, who is working on the project of a new map in Missouri. Governor Kehoe looks like he's going to call a session so they can address a couple of things, including the initiative petition, you know, reform. But what is the legality of that, doing that outside of the 10-year cycle with the census? Because it seems to me that Texas, Greg Abbott, they think that this is buttoned up and they're doing this legally. That's my understanding. Do you agree with that?
I do. I do agree with that. I don't think that there's going to be a prohibition against doing this in the middle of a census time. But listen, whether it's Texas or whether it's Missouri, all of this from the legal standpoint, Mark, is going to come down to one thing and one thing only, and that is this. Does the redistricting violate a traditional racial voting block to the extent that it would violate the Voting Rights Act, because it would be basically eliminating the vote power of a racial minority?
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at Missouri really only has two racial block districts, obviously Kansas City, obviously St. Louis City. And so if you redistrict that too much and eat into those districts, there's going to be a legal challenge. Well, there's going to be a legal challenge either way. But the legal challenge has a greater likelihood of being successful if it erodes too much into the minority voting bloc.
And then how would they determine that? Because my understanding in talking with Nick and some of the other folks involved in this is they wouldn't really touch this district here, the former Cori Bush, the current Wesley Bell district, as much as they would the one in Kansas City.
Correct. And so it really doesn't matter one way or the other whether they do one or both. But if they eat too much into Emanuel Cleaver's district, and you have to be able to show that it's not being done racially. So, you know, people are going to be looking at this both for it and against it. And on the for side, they're going to be looking at it for how can we, you know, gerrymander, because it's perfectly legal, despite what Gavin Newsom says. How do we gerrymander this to maybe make a change politically without impacting it racially? that's the challenge that lies ahead for the legislators.
Well, in California, you mentioned Gavin Newsom. They're going to do the same damn thing right now, which might make, you know, Texas a bit of a wash.
Well, what's interesting to me is this, politically, not legally, but politically. You've got both Pritzker and Newsom who are saying gerrymandering is bad. Gerrymandering is bad. So what are we going to do? We're going to gerrymander more, even though we're in the two most gerrymandered states in the country. And politically, I think voters are going to realize that you're basically saying if something is bad, we're going to do it badder, okay, to right. use bad English on purpose. That doesn't ring true politically.
So on that front, let me kind of shift gears to D.C., and I just spoke with my friend Josh Kay about this a little bit, too, and what's going on. There was some great audio that I'll share this afternoon, maybe even a little bit later this hour when I let you go, of J.D. Vance and Stephen Smith and a couple other folks in D.C., really taking down the media because you had these white hippie protesters and their case is, look, you got African-Americans that are desperately in need of more law enforcement. I think the same could be said for St. Louis. But obviously anything that Trump does, people don't like, even though, you know, behind the scenes, and we've heard this from Joe Scarborough and others, they've admitted, yeah, we kind of got a problem here. We got a crime problem here. So how long can this thing last legally? Because what he's doing there is also legal. I don't think there's any dispute about that, but there's a timetable on it.
There is. Under the District of Columbia Home Rule Act from 1973, the president essentially has 30 days unilateral to do whatever he wants. After 30 days, and this is maybe some contention in the Trump administration about this, but I think the law is very clear. After 30 days, you have to get congressional approval. And so he would have to go get that from Congress and from both the House and the Senate. But for 30 days, it's unfettered action under the District of Columbia Home Rule Act, 1973.
Hey, I spent some time on this, and I guess there's a little bit of breaking news about this afternoon. Did you dig into that report from the law firm on the tornado situation, the sirens not going up? Did you look at that yesterday? Did you have time?
I did. Oh, yeah, I did. It was from Carmody McDonald, I think, was the law firm that did that.
Right. And it was pretty detailed. So the breaking news this afternoon, and it was only a matter of time, Sarah Russell, who was the SEMA chief, the city emergency management chief for 4 years, has officially been fired. The Post-Dispatch story says no official reason was immediately given. Well, I can give you an official reason. She sucked at her job.
Wow.
I think we found that out. I mean, that report was highly critical. You don't often see, you know, you're a lawyer, you can maybe clarify this or confirm this. You don't often see the word dither in a legal document, but that report accused her of dithering in the aftermath of the tornado and going up and, you know, doing what they called the, how they refer to it. It was like a windshield operation, something that the cops normally do, assessing the damage, and she should have been back in the office. So there were a lot of things they didn't like. They didn't like the way that she answered some of the questions, didn't take responsibility. Kara Spencer did the right thing by putting her on suspension. She's been getting paid, though, for the past few months, but now she has been let go from the city, and appropriately so. I mean, someone, it's not like they're just looking for a head either. It was someone that should have bore a lot of responsibility in all this.
Yeah, and I think the breaking news, not that she was fired, because I think that was a foregone conclusion, but I think the breaking news, if you look at that report, is that we were initially told that Sarah Russell was at this conference, which that's a whole other issue, some global warming nonsense, but she was at this conference, and then she came back. And that was the delay. But in the report from Carmody McDonald, they indicated there was a 2-hour delay between the hitting of the tornado and her returning to the office. And you just mentioned the she spent allegedly some windshield time. But that 2-hour delay was just unacceptable. And Kara Spencer made the right call.
You know, one thing I would say, and I went over this yesterday, is that there was even a request from Sarah Russell at one point. She wanted the whole siren system taken down because they didn't think it was reliable. And there was money that was allocated, and I guess they're in the process of still redoing the whole thing. But it was a mess. You know, there were people in the office, I think, that were confused about what the protocol was because it was never spelled out. But yeah, you know, they are kind of underselling this whole conference thing in the Post-Dispatch coverage. They're not really mentioning that it was a woke conference that really didn't do anything to help them achieve their jobs anyway, which is a story in and of itself. But Sarah Russell no longer with the city of St. Louis. Brad, awesome to have you on. Thank you again for doing so much fill here the past few weeks and also providing me with some legal assistance when I got pulled over in Webster Groves. I did tell that story last week, by the way. Thankfully,
my pleasure, Mark.
Yeah, you kept me out of the Husco. We'll talk soon. Thank you, Brad Young.
All right,
we'll see you.
Bye-bye.
Wednesday afternoon, Alex Rich will visit with us in the next hour. Sue's News on a Wednesday edition. Tomorrow afternoon, George Gray from The Price is Right will be here doing Woo-hoo. The Price is Wrong, a little fun that we have with him occasionally, and tomorrow will be one of those days. Senator Eric Schmidt, who has a new book out that I must be mentioned in, I'm guessing.
Well, I'm sure that's
maybe
true.
There's a whole chapter, but he'll visit with us after 5 o'clock this evening. You know, I was mentioning these protests in D.C. This is what it sounded like at Union Station. They're not happy that there's actually federal, you know, National Guard presence to make sure that crime is reduced in D.C. It was a great event with J.D. Vance, Pete Hegseth, and also Stephen Smith this morning. These protesters were kind of confronting them and trying to call them out, and they had great responses.
You hear these people outside screaming, free D.C. Let's free D.C. from lawlessness. Let's free Washington, D.C. from one of the highest murder rates in the entire world. Let's free Washington, D.C. so that young families can walk around and feel safe and secure. That's what we're trying to free D.C. from. And as Stephen said, it's kind of bizarre that we have a bunch of old, primarily white people who are out there protesting the policies that keep people safe when they've never felt danger in their entire lives.
Yeah, so he's referring to Stephen Miller, who's quite a wordsmith. You don't want to tangle with Stephen Miller, and some of the hippies did that today.
For too long, 99% of this city has been terrorized by 1% of this city. And the voices that you hear out there, those crazy communists, they have no roots. They have no connection to the city. They have no families they're raising in this city. They have no one that they're sending to school in this city. They have no jobs in this city. They have no connections to this community at all. But they're the ones who've been advocating for the 1%, the criminals, the killers, the rapists, the drug dealers. And I'm glad they're here today. Because me, Pete, and the Vice President are all going to leave here, and inspired by them, we're going to add thousands more resources to this city to get the criminals and the gang members out of here. We're going to dismantle those networks, and we're going to prove that a city can serve for the law-abiding citizens who live there. We are not going to let the communists destroy a great American city, let alone the nation's capital.
Yeah, it's not that complicated, really, and it is interesting, and unfortunately, Harry Enten has had to, you know, break the news to the CNN audience that the polling on this is pretty clear. People do not like crime, and they want crime reduced. And I even mentioned this yesterday. Somebody said this either on Twitter. I saw it somewhere, Sue. For all the you know, the damage that we have in North City and North County from the tornado, and there's another story today in the local paper that talks about the cost of the cleanup has almost doubled. They're talking about almost $800,000. But remember when, you know, when a cop gets involved and there is a shooting of any type by a white cop, well, BLM comes out and there's all these protesters. What about the people that live in these neighborhoods? Where's Black Lives Matter for those people? I think the answer is pretty obvious. But what's happening in Washington, D.C. is all these professional protesters are out like they
right.
like they typically are. Unfortunately. All right, we're going to take a break. I have some fun stuff for Alex Rich in the next hour. There's something that relates to parents and kids' sports that caught my attention with Greg Olson being on Fox this morning, saying some things that really resonated with me. Alex is a former collegiate athlete. He probably will have something to say about that. Eric Schmidt coming up after 5 o'clock. He's got a book out called The Last Line of Defense, How to Beat the Left in Court. He will have reaction to the FBI. He tweeted about this morning. The FBI is adding agents here in St. Louis. We'll find out how they will be used, and I'm sure he'll have something to say about Andrew Bailey heading to D.C., becoming the co-deputy director of the FBI. Also, in the 5 o'clock hour, I saw a story last week in the Wall Street Journal about used car prices staying very high because of supply and demand. And my friend Alex Rosenberger of Master Cars, Inc. is going to weigh in on that issue. We haven't touched base with him in a while. You know, you had that period during the pandemic and after where supply was really, really tight and used car prices spiked. They leveled off, but I think they're kind of back into the higher territory again. But we'll have Alex cover that. Plus, of course, an audio cut of the day and more.